Big meaty topic today. K-State moving the Stanford game to AT&T Stadium in Arlington, playing at Jerry World on September 4th. I like the move. I think it is the right decision. I think it was a tough and complicated decision because of the impact on local businesses, particularly with COVID. But I still think there's enough to tilt the scales in favor of this being the correct way to go. And by the way, I will mention this again. This is something that had been in the works for a long time. I thought we would be having this conversation and be doing this show a year ago. It never was made official. Then COVID happened, and I'm sure that that really threw a wrench into things here. But this is something that's been thought out for a long time that I believe was reconsidered after COVID. And after taking all of the elements of this into consideration, the decision was made to go ahead and move the game to AT&T Stadium and play at Jerry World. Now, I'm going to reiterate here why I do think that there's more in the pros category of this than the cons. The pros here being that you are doing this to raise the profile of K-State football. You're going to be playing potentially prime time. You'll be playing a game that could be prime time Saturday night, Labor Day weekend of college football when the games are more spread out. You're playing in a spot where LSU has played three times since 2011. TCU, Auburn, Oregon, Miami, Florida State, Alabama, Michigan, all schools that have played in this game under different names at AT&T Stadium in Arlington. It's what big-time programs do. They typically play now, the elite of the elite will play these games frequently. High-profile non-conference games at neutral sites, especially neutral sites as prestigious as Jerry World in Arlington. It helps that you're also doing it in a place that's a fertile recruiting base for K-State. 20 players on the roster this past year were from the state of Texas. That's more than double any state not named Kansas on K-State's roster. And I don't think I really need to explain in depth the significance of being able to recruit DFW and the state of Texas in general. The players like it. We're already seeing that from some of their reactions on social media. This is something that will sell very well to players and recruits, and that goes to any recruit, not just those that are from the state of Texas. That's a cool thing. Like, recruits take notice of this. They know that big profile, high profile teams play games like this at the beginning of the college football season. And listen, they're kids. They like the shiny object there, which is Jerry World and playing that game in that place. They want to play where the Dallas Cowboys play. Okay? They want to play where Dak Prescott goes out and throws footballs. Shout out to you, Mitch. Dak Prescott reference. They want to go play where Dak plays every week. They want the prestige of being able to go have that kind of opportunity bestowed on them. And yes, there is an impact on the local economy here because you are missing out on what would be an eighth home game. But that's a part of the point. This is a year in which K-State would have had eight home games. If there were ever a year that you were going to do it, it's this year when you have eight home games scheduled, because now the community still gets seven, which is typically a better year than most, like this year where there were six. The 5-4 split in the Big 12 helps push this to a seven at 1.8 home game year. Would have been great to have an extra home game for the local businesses and the local economy here based on COVID and everything that's happened. I totally understand that. But let's bring in the kicker here, and that is the financial incentive for the university itself, for the athletic department to do this. K-State expects to net $2.2 million out of this. The guarantee is $2.8 million. The $2.2 million net that is expected here compares to what the typical net was relayed to me of a home football game is of about $500,000. Now, even if you're skeptical about those numbers, even if you want to take into account that if K-State were playing just a normal home game, there would typically be some kind of guarantee that you're having to pay, a six-figure guarantee to a school to come play that game. We can still say that even a conservative estimate here is going to say K-State is making seven figures out of this by moving that game, which would be at least the net of two extra home games added on there in revenue. And as much as we talk about local businesses hurting, and they are, and I'm completely sympathetic to that, the athletic department has been hurting too, and that does affect livelihoods and lives there too, and they have a bottom line to think about as well. So when you throw in the financial incentive with the prestige, with the advantages for the program, with the long-term benefit that this can have for the Manhattan business community if things like this keep happening and continue to elevate the profile of the football program, which leads to greater success, more excitement, more people coming, more people spending money. All of that outweighs missing out, to me, on just the one home game for around here. Very sympathetic to business owners around here that would beg to differ, and I understand that I'm not in a position to have that be my primary concern. Not directly, anyway. Although I do work at a radio station where it helps to have the local businesses obviously thriving. But I'm not directly impacted by that. So I understand. And I am empathetic and sympathetic to that. But my opinion here is there are too many pros. I think K-State had to do this. Too many pros in that column. And I'll throw on one more thing here. We don't know that stadiums will be at full capacity in September. That's not something that anybody wants to hear, and it's not something, frankly, that I want to hear or think about, that we could potentially be going through part or a full other college football season without it being like we're accustomed to it being. But listen, I mean, right now, the vaccine rollout has not exactly been lightning fast. We don't know how many people are going to take the damn thing across the country. So we may not be in a position. There are no guarantees. I mean, listen, we don't know what's... This pandemic has taken a lot of twists and turns. There are no guarantees that we will be back to having full stadium environments by the time this game is going to be played on September 4th. And that gives you even more incentive to go make this move right now from a financial standpoint, because ticket money, you would not be able to take in as much ticket money potentially if that is the case as you normally would for a home game. You're getting a $2.8 million guarantee to go play this game right now. Take the money, no questions asked. And if we're talking about like fan environment and whatever extra ticket money would be there on top of that, which state, Texas or Kansas, do we think will be closer to the front of the line on just Katie bar the door, letting as many people as possible back into a stadium early? It'd be Texas. I mean, Texas, it's like Texas and Florida. Texas and Florida were the two that were really pushing for that early on. Dan Mullen had that game this year where he played at Texas A&M and was just whining and complaining because they had so many people there at their game because the state of Texas was cool with it. Like, you could see potentially more K-State fans actually at the game in Arlington by the time it actually happens than would be feasible to have here in Manhattan just based on what the attendance restrictions would be. I understand those are hypotheticals, but those are hypotheticals that you have to think about now because of the world that we live in a post-COVID society. So that's just one more thing to throw onto that scale. And I'm sorry, but to me, the scale tilts too far in the pro column. There are too many positives to this to outweigh what is decidedly a difficult negative to swallow. Understand that. But to me, it's the right move and one that K-State had to make.
Now, I'll repeat what I said in the first hour, which is I totally see both sides of this argument. I think you're right with the arguments you're making for having the game in Arlington, Texas. I think it's easy to see it that way, but it's also to see it on the economic level of Manhattan, Kansas, for the fans here in Manhattan that want to see the home game. Against Stanford, I do appreciate K-State making sure that there's still 7 home games. That's pretty big. All right, having the 7 home games is a pretty normal thing. It's either 6 or 7. We had an 8-game schedule, I think, in 2013, which was awesome. Hey, that's great. More the merrier here in Manhattan. You put the poll up earlier about do you like the move? Do you hate it? Do you care? I think that's a good poll to kind of gauge where people are at. But I would also kind of like to know who is willing to make the trip. Who is willing to make the trip for a season opener against Stanford when there's still potential capacity limits because of COVID-19? And I don't know if you mentioned this earlier, but Jerry World has been more flexible with that kind of stuff. And probably will be even more flexible coming up in September. And I mean, of course, because of such the large capacity at AT&T Stadium, you can still, with restrictions, have thousands of people in there, which would be kind of a normal thing for K-State to, if they were just to travel with 20,000. I think Jerry World would be very happy about that if there were still restrictions on capacity due to COVID. But it's a 7.5-hour drive from Bill Snyder Family Stadium to AT&T Stadium. It's 498 miles. But with the if there is a capacity limit with COVID, I would expect ticket prices to maybe be a little bit higher than what they normally would. I don't know what the ticket prices are yet. Haven't heard anything about it, but they might be a tad bit pricey.
Well, and that's a part of this, Mitch. I'm sure there are a lot of people. I mean, I would put like myself included in this if I were going to be a fan and try to travel to a game. Like, purse strings are a little tighter these days because of COVID.
It has to do with the financial impact of this game.
Well, I mean,
who's willing to spend the money?
Well, that's what I'm saying. There may not be as many people that are able to as would normally like to, and that may tilt some of the opinion on this. And I'm, again, something I can be very empathetic to, in addition to sympathetic to, because I myself am in that situation where financially this year did hurt. So I get that, and I'm not saying that you have to be enthralled with this decision or love it if it's going to be the difference between, hey, I may have been able to pull that off and just make a trip to Manhattan and go to a game. Again, I would remind you, the season ticket packages are based around seven games, so this would have been separate from it anyway. You would have had an eighth game that would have had to be paid for outside of a season ticket package. But I can understand if you'd say that would still be more feasible for me than like making a trip to Dallas for this game, and I'm disappointed by that. I get it. I would just ask you to also see the bigger picture here and see that this is something that can help K-State's brand and help the program and create a better program for you to have more exciting home games to go to in the future. And realize that it's not everything is not just about how it will impact next season. This is a move made with a bigger picture thinking in mind, like a bigger picture thought here of elevating the status and profile of the program in mind. So I would just say, I would try to encourage you to be understanding. Obviously, I'm trying to convince you of my side of, I guess you can call it an argument here. It certainly has been on Twitter most of the day. I'm trying to convince you of the merits of my points here and my argument. But really, what I would stress to you more than anything, you don't have to be thrilled with it. You don't have to love it. But embrace, I would hope that by the time it comes around, you can embrace the exciting elements of it. Playing in a primetime game that first weekend, playing in Jerry World, playing a high-profile opponent there, something the players will be excited about. And I'd hope that you just have an understanding of why this move is being made. Financial times aren't easy with the athletic department, just like they're not easy for everybody. They're getting a financial boost while doing something that's good for the program and that was going to happen pre-COVID anyway in a normal economic society. I'll throw this in too. I mean, I don't know how exactly the money will be spent. I don't know how it all gets divvied up. But we've talked a lot and complained a lot about how Taylor Bratt does not have more help on the recruiting front. Well, seven figures of extra revenue to the athletic department is not going to hurt when it comes to trying to get to that point where you can get him some more help and be able to recruit better. You need money to do that. And this is something that can bring that into, obviously, right away by signing on the dotted line, the university's athletic department. So that's my plea to you and my pitch to you about this game being moved. 5-3-7-13-50, if you do disagree. Last I checked on the poll, it was still in favor of people who would rather see the game played in Manhattan, 44% to 39% of those who are all for it being played in Dallas, 17% say they're pretty neutral on this. But you can weigh in, 5-3-7-13-50, or at J.L. Kurtz. A lot of passionate people on Twitter. We can get to some of those tweets coming up next here on the game. Boy, I do feel like we need a bit of kumbaya here, all right? We can disagree on what we think of the Stanford game being moved to AT&T Stadium in Arlington, home of the Dallas Cowboys, home of Mitch Fortner's Dallas Cowboys. We don't have to, like, be totally at each other's throats either, okay? I'm a sports talk host. I'm supposed to bring it pretty strong most of the time by definition, and I'm not going to mince words on where I stand on this, but, like, it's not, you know, Twitter can be a rough place. Like, you know, we don't need to be doing name-calling and all that kind of thing, okay? So let's just chill. We're all K-State fans, all pulling in essentially the same direction here. Just have different thoughts and ideas about where we're going, okay? Just don't. You can disagree with each other. We can go back and forth on this, but I don't like seeing things get nasty, all right? Not what I'm trying to support here. I am very much in favor of moving the game to AT&T Stadium. I am excited about the opportunity that's there. I'm excited about playing in a big-time game like that. Maybe there's something, too, like I'm somebody that's more jaded by working in sports media and specifically covering K-State for a long time, and I've been to a million home games. I just, the excitement of playing a game at AT&T Stadium to me far outweighs the excitement that I would have for playing a home game at Bill Snyder Family Stadium against Stanford. Really does, because again, Mitch, I don't think Stanford is Auburn. I don't think we're talking about 2014 Auburn.
I think you're underestimating it.
Stanford.
Yeah.
Mississippi State was a... Where's that preseason?
You tell me people wouldn't be hyped to see that game?
I think they would be excited, but I don't think it would come anywhere close to 2014 Auburn levels. Not anywhere close. I think we're talking
UCLA?
Mitch, I already told you what it is. I told you it's 2012 Miami or it's 2018 Mississippi State, both of which...
This game's bigger than Mississippi State.
Mississippi State was a ranked team coming off of a great season
but
the year
K-State
before.
K-State was struggling.
From the SEC. K-State's struggling right now.
But
how many games did K-State win last year?
But K-State struggled without Skylar Thompson, and he's coming back. Deuce Vaughn provides a ton of hype.
Who was the starting Mitch?
You tell me there's no hype coming into the 2021 season.
In 2018, K-State returned Skylar Thompson, who played quarterback for much of the season after winning 7 games. This year, they returned Skylar Thompson at quarterback after winning 4 games. That argument is it's not valid.
I'm telling you, first game out of the gates, warm summer day, there's going to be a lot of hype around that game.
Warm summer day.
Yep.
Okay. Warm summer day, 11 a.m. kickoff, FS1.
It wouldn't be 11 a.m. Hey, 11 a.m. is the new prime time.
Exactly.
All right? It is the new prime time.
Yeah.
Just ask Fox. Fox was very generous to K-State this year about putting them on their big noon kickoff. Think of all the eyeballs that watched K-State last year.
Yeah, great. Big noon kickoff. Sweet.
When K-State needed a primetime game, or when Fox needed a primetime game, who'd they come to? The Wildcats. They like Chris Klieman.
I just, Mississippi State, to me, was a bigger deal. SEC.
It was bigger deal the next year on the road.
Okay, but they were a better team. Mississippi State was a better team in 2018 when they rolled in. And
K-State was expecting to get beat. Or K-State fans were expecting to get beat that day.
What are you expecting against Stanford?
To win?
Mm.
Okay, Stanford 4-2 last year. They lost their first 2 games, right? All their games they won last year were single digits. One possession games.
Stanford is... They have fallen off a notch or two in the last few years.
That's true.
They are from the least exciting Power 5 football conference that's out there right now. And they're not a big football school anyway with like a big national football brand. They have a big brand as a university.
Right.
But they don't have a big brand as a football program.
Right. They're not Alabama. You know, they're not a big SEC school.
They're not Mississippi State.
I think they're bigger than Mississippi State, John.
They're not Mississippi State of 3 years ago.
Okay, great. Mississippi State had one good year.
And a lot of that is like SEC. You know what I mean? The SEC attached to an opponent really does mean something. Like, because I think a lot of the hype for these games is like you need kind of a villain to root against, and those were pretty easy. When it's USC in 2002, a high-profile opponent, easy to root against, one of the traditional powers of college football, Miami. Though in 2012 they weren't like the Michael Irvin Miami, they were still Miami that everybody had grown to hate, and the U documentary was popular at that point, and so there was a lot of reason to be fired up about that from their brand and from a, hey, let's go take down these guys that a lot of people, if we're being honest about the sensibilities of people in Kansas, didn't really like. And that game was not sold out. The fans didn't show up to sell out the 2012 Miami game with one of the most hyped K-State teams we've seen in a long time, because that's Arthur Brown, Colin Klein returning off of a 10-win season.
But that doesn't mean...
You have a hard time selling me on, like, the fans would be full throat for Stanford if you couldn't sell out that game with the hype of that season. And again, all of this discussion that we're having is assuming that there would be full attendance on September 4th, which is far from a guarantee. I think it's a possibility, but it is far from a guarantee. And that changes everything. I mean, that really absolutely changes everything. If there's not full attendance, that changes things drastically and tilts the scales far in favor of going and playing this game at AT&T Stadium.
But what I'm trying to tell you is the hype behind Stanford. I think there's enough hype for a game like this when you just think about the program's history, who has come through Stanford, what kind of success they have had season by season and moving into a bowl game. I mean, when you think of Stanford, who do you think of? I mean, you think about Christian McCaffrey, Andrew Luck, who have turned in, well, not so much Andrew Luck, he just had issues with injuries, but Christian McCaffrey is one of the best running backs in the NFL right now. They've had a ton of success at Stanford, even though fans don't exactly go to the games, which sucks for them. But when you think of Mississippi State, what do you think of?
I think of SEC. I think of
not a top brand SEC, Vanderbilt. I mean, they're an SEC school, but that's just
nobody's
not as exciting.
Nobody's making any Vanderbilt argument here. Nobody's making any Vanderbilt argument at all.
But when you think of, when you put on the marquee, Stanford, Mississippi State. I mean, come on, Stanford is the much bigger name.
I think it's debatable. I think it's absolutely debatable, which is kind of the point to me here. And the other thing about Stanford is, if we're talking about it from this is one argument we haven't really addressed here yet that I've seen just a little bit of. Competitive advantage. Like, okay, so you're going to go to a neutral site game as opposed to playing a game where you'd have a full rockin' stadium here and lose the competitive advantage there. Well, Stanford, it's going to hurt less than it would playing a number of other teams because Stanford fans, I mean, I've been to a game in Palo Alto.
Yeah, so have I.
When they had Christian McCaffrey and were a great team, and it was about 40% full. I mean, they're not bringing fans to Arlington, where you're going to a place that has a pretty big alumni base of K-State fans around there and a lot of K-State alums living in there, OKC. Obviously, fans would drive from here. You'll have a competitive advantage from the crowd there. Now, I'm not going to sit here and tell you it would be the same as if it's a full packed house at Snyder Family Stadium, but you have to understand all these things are being taken into account. Would sting less than some opponents that would be high profile that you would move to a game like this? May not even be full attendance anyway, gives us all this exposure, gives us this financial incentive. It's when you add all of that up together that you get coming to this decision. So you can argue with me as loud as you want about one of these specific points, but what I'm telling you is you need to be looking at the whole big picture here. And the big picture, there's just too much there to add up that's dropping that scale down, and the other side of keeping the game here in Manhattan is just, it's flying upwards. There's too much on the other side. Because this is the kind of opportunity you're not going to get. If you turn it down, AT&T Stadium isn't likely to come back to you on this thing. Like, this is not an opportunity that you can be in the business, really, of just passing up. This is an opportunity that you take advantage of right now because it likely wouldn't come back if you turn it down, and you could potentially parlay it into more. If you have a good showing, if fans show up, if things go well, obviously winning the game would help. And if you continue to become a good program, that helps. It's an opportunity that I would tell you need to take advantage of, especially when there's so much working in your favor on this deal. So that to me is where it's at. We can get bogged down in the specifics of Stanford and Mississippi State and all that. And congratulations to you, Mitch, finding a way to the second that I tried to go kumbaya on everybody, getting me screaming about Skylar Thompson into a microphone. That was pretty good counter-argument work. That's not lost on me that just happened, that I tried to tell everybody to calm the hell down, and then I just started screaming.
Allow me to stand. I'm going to stand up and take a bow for that then.
Yes, please do. Yeah. Please do. I've got let's lighten the mood. Let's lighten the mood. Mitch is going to make fun of me because of a story that I'm about to tell next.
You're in the game on News Radio KMA.
So I got a haircut today. Shout out to my girl Crystal at Gaia. She's the best.
Does she have a spot open? I need a haircut too. It's long.
Well, I'm sure you could get in. It may take you a little while. She is in very high demand because she's great.
You could, like, you know, just throw your name out there and say, hey, my co-host, he needs to look sharp.
For sure. I mean, I'm not kidding. I'm sure that I could.
Can you hook him up with the John Kurtz special? I don't want your haircut, but
if you're serious about it, I'm sure that I could. But, you know, as one does. I had to take a picture of my haircut and put it on my Instagram story.
Oh, jeez. I can't be that self-centered.
And the difference today was that it was the first time I was taking that picture with an iPhone 12 because I recently upgraded. I had had, and I know, first world problems. I get it. But I think it was the longest stint that I've gone with a phone, maybe since like the first phone that I ever had. I went like 3.5, almost 4 years with the old iPhone that I had. I was putting it off. It seemed like a lot of work to transfer it over, which, side note, crazy how quickly they just transfer everything. I mean, you just like download something that takes 10 minutes and then bam, throw it on the new phone. Everything is in the exact same spot that it used to be. It's crazy how much even that's evolved since the last time I got a phone. But so I got this iPhone 12, right? And it's got an insane camera on it. Just an insane camera. It blows my mind how good that is. And you can even go in after the fact and like adjust how blurry the background is, you know, to sharpen that contrast between those two. Like, it's nuts. And I took this picture in portrait mode, which you can now use in, like, selfie mode, like, you know, selfie, like, taking a selfie in portrait mode. You could not do that on the phone that I had. And it was like, wow. Okay, so you would think that'd be, wow, that looks great. Let me post it right away. I was like, wow. That's like almost too good. I feel like I look weird. That freaks me out. It's like too sharp. There's too much showing there. I don't know if that's that I have too many flaws. I was like, I need to filter this thing fast. Like, let me find as many filters as I'm going to put a filter on the actual photo in the photos part of it. Then I'm going to throw another filter on when it gets into Instagram. Like, I don't know about this. I was excited about the camera. Like, man, you can take some really sweet pictures with this thing now. I think I'm regretting that decision because it's just too much. It's too good. It's too intense. You know, it's like if you just ate something that's like way too sweet. Like, you're kind of crazy. You know, you need a little sweet, some dessert, and then you just take something that's like, wow, that is like just too rich. Too rich, too decadent, too much. I'm going to have to go back to like eating some steak or something just to offset this. That's what I was like, I need to just go find me my old brick phone, just something that can take the worst picture ever just to offset this right now. My palate needs to be cleansed.
So wait, are you calling yourself, like, do you think you look ugly in these pictures?
I don't know if like ugly is the right word. I would just say weird.
Well, weird. I guess you better take the phone back to the store. John doesn't look pretty.
This is a big deal, Mitch, because I care very much about the image that I'm projecting here, okay? I need it to be good. I need everything to be positive. This is carefully curated.
You or Brady take a picture of me in Central Park because I needed a new Tinder profile pic.
And you're still using
it. I'm still using it. I'll take one picture every 2 or 3 years and I'll ride with it.
Okay, but that's the point, though, is that we forced you to do like a photo shoot in Central Park and it turned out to be a great picture.
Yeah.
So these things are important. Even you, who want to play the cool guy. You want to be the cool guy that doesn't ever think about anything as frivolous as that, as how you might look on the gram, as the kids say. But really, you do. You do. You care about it less, but you still care. Cutting to the core of everybody here. Everybody cares these days.
I, like 2 or 3 years ago, put a selfie on Instagram, and I thought right away to myself, God, what an a-hole. Like, what is this jerk doing?
Listen, I'm not saying that there wasn't a barrier for me to cross at some point to do that, Mitch, to actually take a selfie of myself and put it out somewhere for public consumption. I don't do it frequently. Here's the thing with these kinds of things. You have to pick your battles. You can't spam everybody. You can't throw it out there every single day, but you do it sparingly. You do it sparingly.
You know, Terry just called in and he made a great point, and that is we can say now that you have the perfect face for radio.
Oh, that is accurate.
Your phone is confirmed.
Yeah, well, the funny thing is I had a much better face for radio when I first started in radio. That was definitely a face for radio. It's become a lot prettier over the years. And I don't need to fade back into my 30s. I do not need to be fading back into the face for radio stage. So there's, Terry, you're probably right. There's an insecurity that is being hit upon there. Also, I love the fact that we did the most divisive topic that I've seen in a long time today for basically the entire show, the Stanford game being moved to AT&T Stadium where the Cowboys play. And I've seen all this vitriol on Twitter and people going back and forth, back and forth. Not a single call until I said that I was freaked out by the selfie I took with my new iPhone 12. Then the phone lines ring. Would not have predicted that. Do you guys all care about my appearance too?
Well, if there's people out there, if you're expecting people to call in and throw a bone at you, say, don't worry about it, John. You're still good looking. You're only 31 years old.
No, I'm not trolling for sympathy.
Nobody's going to give you any sympathy today.
I'm not trolling for sympathy. That's not what I'm doing. That's not.
And you're not getting that from me. That's for sure.
You can bet your you know what. I knew that I wasn't getting that from you.
I don't like taking pictures. I'm not photogenic. I think I have a good side, but man, I'm not made for taking pictures of myself. The best picture I was ever taken of me is after a Royals game, and I'm laying down in left field because it was just after the fireworks.
Not better than your Central Park.
Went there for Affiliates Day, and I'm there, you know, kind of doing I don't even know what to even call the pose, but I'm on my side, one leg is up at a 90 degree angle, sunglasses on, finger gun at the camera. Like, man, it does not get better than that because the background is perfect. The lighting is perfect. I mean, how often do you get to take a picture in left field right after a Royals game?
Well, it's a good picture, and it for the dating apps, it's a very good picture. Displays a lot of things there. I mean, one, you do look relatively cool. You're, like, on the field at the K. I mean, like, hey, cool guy. Must have some connections to be able to do that. That's all fantastic, Mitch. You're knocking it out of the park. Now you just need four more. So that's why you need continue to take these pictures.
I have a dog. Finn takes up a couple of those spots.
You don't know. Real estate's pretty limited there. You don't need to be throwing the dog. You could be typecast as like the crazy cat lady, but crazy dog guy if you're throwing too many dog pictures in there. There's a fine line.
Now, Finn is photogenic. That is a good-looking dog. And I have a side-by-side of him in a shirt in one. And then in another picture, which I didn't take these are old pictures, but in the other one, he's wearing a beanie hat. And like, oh my goodness, like, how does that not capture your heart?
Well, I don't know why I'm trying to argue this. Clearly, my love life is not indicative of me telling anybody how to live theirs, Mitch. So you do you. And give us Jabroni of the Week next.
And then everyone said, Jabroni.
You Jabronis hit the jackpot.
That Jabroni you have sitting in your studio.
Ow. Is this Jabroni's name?
Jabroni of the Week.
It's Wednesday. You know what that means. That means it's time for Jabroni of the Week. Three dishonorable mentions. I'll culminate with my official Jabroni of the Week. At one point, everybody involved here had been considered to be the top on honor of Jabroni of the Week. But three dishonorable mentions. There had to be some runner-ups. And first, I'm going to start with old Big Ben. Ben Roethlisberger. Well, his team lost to the Cleveland Browns in the wild card round of the playoffs. And Big Ben, he had a career day. 501 yards passing. He threw the ball like 65 times, four touchdowns, but he also threw four interceptions. Now, there's speculation going around that this was Ben Roethlisberger's last game, and he was seen on the sideline at the end of the game on the bench shedding some tears. He was very emotional. He was seen crying on the sideline. Now, I'm taking it a little bit easy on him because I understand if that's his last game, I can understand being emotional. Every football player has been there. And so that's why he's first on the dishonorable mention list.
I have no real sympathy for Ben Roethlisberger on a number of different fronts, so I can agree with that. That image, that was a very memeable image of him on that bench.
My next dishonorable mention is Colts defensive end Kamoka Ture, I think that's how you say his name. But maybe the most boneheaded play, the most boneheaded mistake in the playoffs in the first weekend. because, you know, it's 4th and 3, taking on the Buffalo Bills, but the Colts, I mean, you're right before the half, just 25 seconds left. But, of course, on a 4th and 3 in field goal range, the Colts are going to try to draw you offside, or the Bills are going to try to draw you offside. He bit hard on the hard count, absolutely bit hard. It was an embarrassing offside penalty to the point where the whole bench, if you watch the background and watch the Colts bench, visibly upset. Like, what in the heck are you even thinking? Don't move. Just stand there. Why are you trying to jump and be a hero? So that it was bad, and that cost, because the Colts or the Bills would go on to score a touchdown, and Buffalo won the game by 3 points. I mean, that play could have been a deciding factor in this game. I think there's no doubt about it. It had a hand in it. My last dishonorable mention is going to Alex Rodriguez. I would make him Jabroni of the Week for this, but this is still a lot of pending things, and there's much more bigger story than what I'm going to be able to tell you here. But A-Rod is being sued by his former brother-in-law, Konstantin Skirtis, for racketeering and embezzlement, according to court papers filed in Miami. The lawsuit claims Rodriguez stole millions from his then brother-in-law and tried to profit off of damage caused by Hurricane Ike. This stems from one of the businesses they had together, and this goes back from when he was his brother-in-law from A-Rod's brother-in-law from 02 to 08. There is a ton of information. I just do not have to go through with it, but it's deep. And this could potentially cost A-Rod, we're talking millions of dollars. There was a 136-page lawsuit filed in Miami for this.
J-Lo, I have a song called Love Don't Cost a Thing. Sounds like it might cost a couple more million dollars.
But finally, my Jabroni of the Week is going to President Donald Trump. Now, calm down. Calm down.
Mitch, we just made everybody angry the AT&T discussion today.
Now, this does stem from what happened at the U.S. Capitol a week ago. But there is a heavy sports spin on this. I wouldn't do this unless there was a lot of sports involved. So, just moments ago, Trump was impeached for the second time. Now, for what took place at the Capitol, of course, he has been blamed for inciting it. Now, because of that, the Lakers announced that they are going to wait for the new presidency to make their trip to the White House. It doesn't end there. Bill Belichick, who is a friend of Donald Trump, said Thursday that he will not accept the Presidential Medal of Freedom, which is obviously a huge deal. But he will not take it. And then finally,
can I ask, why was Bill Belichick getting that?
He may be considered the best NFL coach of all time. There's a lot of celebrities and a lot of sports figures that get the Medal of Freedom. But anyway, what I want to get to
do we realize what he did this year? I mean, he wasn't good this year.
Two of Trump's golf courses will now not host a PGA event, including the PGA Championship in 2022.
What do the Patriots got? I mean, he gets it for going 7-9 this year? We couldn't pick a better time, sometime over the last 3 years?
Maybe Tom Brady should get it.